Welcome to the 14th briefing of Operation Sovereign Borders. I'm pleased to advise that despite increasing pressures and prevailing good weather, the level of arrivals remains at the 80% reduction levels I've referred to on numerous occasions at previous briefings, and that's around the 80 to 85 arrivals per week compared to the average between the announcement of the regional resettlement arrangement and the commencement of Operation Sovereign Borders of around 460 per week. The smugglers are continuing to try to get ventures away, but the government continues to have the upper hand. And as we move forward, the government's position will continue to strengthen as we move well beyond the operation establishment phase for Operation Sovereign Borders. Last week, I reported the $1.2 billion funding black hole for offshore processing left behind by the previous government. Now, that black hole represents the infrastructure and services that were not going to be provided and were not being provided by the former government at our offshore processing centres, which calls into real question whether there was any genuine commitment from the former government to those policies beyond the election. Now, the Coalition has filled that funding black hole by committing the funds necessary to make the policy work and to make sure that policy is sustainable for offshore processing. I have no doubt there will continue to be criticism from those who oppose offshore processing, and where that criticism can be sustained, we will continue to address issues that are raised, but removal of offshore processing is not an option this government will ever contemplate. That is why we are putting in place the funding, the infrastructure and services to support offshore processing in the way it was designed to operate. This includes more than doubling the capacity of these centres for both transferees and staff, enhancing security through the installation of security fencing and CCTV cameras, upgrading medical facilities and support, reconfiguring and integrating contractual arrangements across the operations of both islands, which is still underway, and improving services and utilities infrastructure at both locations. It also includes upgrading transfer facilities and equipment, including medical facilities at Christmas Island, to support the government's 48-hour rapid transfer policy. The upgrade plans are the product of 3 months of solid work to get offshore processing back on track. The job is not yet complete, but it has required a massive effort from the Operation Sovereign Borders Detention Task Group, led by Ken Douglas, with tremendous support from my own department and our many contracting agencies. And I want to thank them very much for the considerable amount of work and effort and planning and implementation that has gone on over the last 3 months in very difficult circumstances. Now, we have been acting on deficiencies we inherited, and we are making significant progress. Now, specifically on health, the funding that I've referred to provides $500,000 per annum for additional maternity and paediatric specialist medical staff on Nauru. It includes an additional $2 million per annum for additional psychiatry resources at OPCs, and an $11 million per annum for a fully staffed inpatient facility with general surgical capability on both islands. The children at Nauru, playground equipment arrived at Nauru last week, and the groundworks are currently underway. It will be placed in a naturally shaded area, and we understand that will be due for completion on the 2nd of January. The site more generally has appropriate equipment for children, including prams, capsules, dummies, toys, books, clothing, and I've been given an inventory of more than 40,000 units of more than 350 specific items which are in that category. On education, and in short, all child transferees on Nauru receive education. Save the Children provide individually tailored education programs that are delivered on-site for the majority of children. A pilot program allowing child transferees to attend local schools has been undertaken. The pilot involved 20 children aged 12 and over. It is expected this program will be expanded in the new year. A range of educational and recreational activities are available to all transferees to support their physical and mental well-being. Excursions and visits outside the centre have been established for all transferees who have met Nauru and PNG customs clearance processes, and these include for sporting and recreation, visits to cultural and historical sites, and participation in local church services. Service providers continue to work closely with local communities to expand activities and excursions for all transferees. Save the Children Australia provide activities specifically for children and family groups, and these include an on-site school for all children, providing individually assessed learning plans for each child with Australian registered and trained teachers. Comprehensive after-school and weekend activity programs, including a range of cultural and art activities, games, formal and informal sports activities and movie nights. Excursions outside of the centre, including to local beaches and schools, and to attend cultural events. A parent form is conducted each fortnight by the education team to seek feedback and suggestions on the education program, and a youth committee is conducted each Monday by the recreation team, where children have the opportunity to provide feedback and suggestions on the recreational program. Now, I also have a statement to make in relation to onshore protection visas, but I will deal with that after Lieutenant General Campbell has provided his weekly report, and I'll ask him to do that now, and then he can respond to any questions you may have, and then we can deal with the other issues that I've raised and any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thanks, Minister. Welcome to the Operation Sovereign Borders briefing for the week concluding 9 o'clock this morning. During this reporting period, a total of 167 illegal maritime arrivals and 4 crew from 2 suspected illegal entry vessels were transferred to Department of Immigration and Border Protection authorities on Saturday the 14th and Thursday the 19th of December, respectively. For the reporting period, 87 people were transferred to offshore processing centres, 43 to Manus and 44 to Nauru. And so as at 9 o'clock this morning, there are a total of 1,234 people on Manus, 804 people on Nauru, and 2,260 people in the Christmas Island facilities. Also, during this reporting period, 2 illegal maritime arrival transferees were returned to Iraq after voluntarily electing to go home. As we head into the Christmas and New Year period, our border security arrangements will remain unchanged. I have recorded a short video message to that effect in response to people smuggler lies that suggest otherwise. The message will be distributed to potential illegal immigrant communities overseas through our liaison network. The message warns those thinking of travelling illegally by boat to Australia not to be fooled into believing Operation Sovereign Borders shuts down over the Christmas and New Year periods. This is untrue. All who arrive will be sent to Manus and Nauru. None will come to Australia. A broadcast quality copy of the message is available from the Customs and Border Protection Media Group, should you seek it. Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I would like to ask, in light of the revelations about 15 doctors there concerned.
Just before we, questions to General Campbell first. Are there any questions to General Campbell?
General Campbell, is it your understanding that asylum seekers who are rescued by the Australian Navy are afforded better medical care than they are inside the Immigration Detention Network?
I work in regard to...
Whilst they're on board ships.
I'm sorry, give me the question again.
Whilst they're on board ships, they receive better medical provision on board ships than they would do inside Immigration Detention.
Immigration detention in our onshore arrangements or our offshore?
On Christmas Island.
Well, I'll take that on notice and get back to you. It's not a question I'd given some consideration to beforehand.
What I can tell you, though, is the reason that on occasions people are even more speedily transferred to onshore health facilities is because the facilities onshore are better than those on the ship.
We certainly do have those transfers occur, and we also have doctors aboard our ships.
That's right. Any other questions for General Campbell? Well, thank you, General Campbell.
Thank you.
I want to deal with the issue of the onshore protection visas, then I'm happy to take further questions. Now, I notice we have some people from Canberra here today. They'll be aware that on the 4th of December, I held a press conference where I announced a cap had been put in place under Section 85 of the Act in relation to the subclass 866 visas for onshore protection visas. Now, I said at the time that had taken in also those who had arrived lawfully in Australia and made protection claims, and that I'd be making further announcements about that, and that is what I am doing today and had planned to do today. What the government has now done is that we have put in place, and this decision was taken on December 5 when I approved a further regulation change to restrict eligibility for the subclass 866 protection visa to onshore applicants who had entered Australia lawfully. Now, once that regulation is in place, the cap was no longer necessary, and I took action this week to remove that cap. So the situation remains that those who have come to Australia illegally by boat will not be getting a permanent visa from this government. So that arrangement has now been put in place. On December 14, the new regulation came into effect, and on December 19, I lifted the cap. So that was the set of arrangements that we'd decided to embark upon on the 5th of December, and now they've worked their way into practice. General questions on that or other matters?
Yes, Mr. Martin, if I understand correctly, the way that the people who are here already won't get permanent protection visas because you won't leave the ministerial bar.
There's a range of things, Lenore. First of all, the 866 visa is only available to people who have entered Australia lawfully and made an application. There are some who are in the old process out of the 33,000 that the previous government who left behind. Some of those, in fact, the vast majority of those, haven't even got to the start of the assessment process because the previous government hadn't commenced that. And the 46A bar has not been yet lifted in relation to those. For the balance, there were assessments that had commenced but hadn't been necessarily finalised. For those very small numbers where assessments have been finalised, we are right now looking at the alternative visa arrangements that we could put in place, or more importantly, the entitlements that we can put in place and attach to their existing visa arrangements, noting that they're on bridging visas, to enable them to have work rights and things of that nature, which would be consistent with the convention.
So I just wanted to try and clarify, if the High Court challenged to your ability to impose that bar succeeds, will
that's not what the High Court challenge is about. It's not about the 46A bar.
Is it not in two parts? It was to the cap and to the bar.
I'm not going to get into a running commentary on a case that's currently before the High Court, but the 46A bar, to my knowledge, is not the matter that's at issue.
At the end of the day, you're confident that whatever happens in the High Court, you will be able to ensure that none of those asylum seekers here already will get permanent.
The court will consider the matters that are before the court, and they'll make their decision, and then we'll go from there.
But could that challenge your ability?
I'm not going to speculate, Lenore, on what the court may or may not do.
Minister, do you stick by your policy of sending new arrivals by boat to offshore within 48 hours, given the problems identified by the 15 doctors about the level of health care and the difficulties they have in making proper assessments before these people pass in?
Well, I certainly do stick to the policy that we've put in place, and let me just say in relation to the matter that has been reported today, the letter was written to the head of IHMS, to the IHMS organisation. That is a matter that has been being interrogated by IHMS together with my department to determine the veracity of the claims that have been made in that letter, whether there are issues within that letter that require attention, then naturally they will receive that attention, but there is a considerable amount of dispute regarding the issues raised in that letter by IHMS and the department, and they will report to me in due course about the matters that require attention. But I should note that IHMS specifically has rejected a number of matters, and I'll just refer you to their statement on those. I understand at least one of the media organisations reported represented here today would be familiar with their response, and that was in relation to the 48-hour transfer and placing people at risk, and that is disputed and rejected by IHMS. So I'll leave it to IHMS to deal with that matter at present, because the letter was to them. IHMS and the department are working to work through the issues raised, And as I said in my opening statement, we have been doing an enormous amount of work over the last 3 months because offshore processing under the previous government was under capacity and underfunded. I mean, to be putting in place in particular the medical service, the psychiatric services, the general surgical capabilities, all of these resources, that's the funding holes we identified, and they're the funding holes we've been filling. We've been office for 3 months and we've made an enormous amount of progress on all of those things, but the policy remains.
The claim within the document that was produced by these 15 doctors is that some asylum seekers are being cleared for offshore processing when they've only had 5 minutes worth of medical assessment, and that is deeply below the bar when it comes to trying to assess somebody. Is that your understanding?
Well, that's a claim that has been made, which IHMS and the department.
Eyewitness in the department process.
That is a claim that has been made by the individual, and that is a claim that. Well, can you, if you let me answer your question, you've asked it. If you give me the courtesy of being able to answer it, as I said, these claims are being reviewed by IHMS and the department to determine their veracity. And once that's been done, they'll make some recommendations in terms of action.
Minister, these are doctors, 15 doctors working on Christmas Island who have conducted these health assessments. Mm-hmm. They are doctors with Australian qualifications, the right to practice here, they're experienced doctors. Do you take seriously their account of medicine as it is practiced on Christmas Island? Do you take it seriously, or are you in fact simply dismissing what they have to say about their experience on Christmas Island?
Well, I don't think anything I've said today, David, could lead you to your last conclusion. I don't think anything I've said could lead you to that conclusion. The claims that have been raised are being assessed by IHMS and my department. And that's what's being done. They're being taken seriously, they're being reviewed, and to the extent that they require a response, then one will be provided, and that's what I would expect to take place.
What kind of briefings do you receive regularly about the medical practices in offshore detention, and have you ever been concerned about the nature of those practices?
Well, one of the reasons that we have had to significantly increase the funding that has gone to medical practices in these places has been because of what we've gone and determined for ourselves and in the reports and the advice that we've received. That's why we've been taking action. We were left with an offshore processing policy that the previous government didn't believe in. They had to be dragged kicking and screaming to restore it, and they only acted when the political winds blew so hard against them that they decided to restore it, an act of political escapism, which came to nothing from their point of view. The authors of these policies are now back in office, and we're ensuring that the proper facilities arrangements are in place at both Nauru and Manus Island. Now, we've had 3 months to set this right. I think we've made an enormous amount of progress, and as each group that goes through Nauru or Manus, and we've made those facilities very open to everybody from the Red Cross to Senator Hanson Young. They can go, they can look, and they come back and they make their various observations. We've been doing the same thing, and that's why we have been acting on quite a large number of items. And that's why I have acknowledged the work that has been done by my own department and the service providers, because they have had to move very, very quickly to get things in place. And now that process is still not complete. It is still not as I would have it, but we are moving, you know, rapidly towards that outcome.
Minister, should a woman with level 5 cerebral palsy be in immigration detention?
Well, David, again, I've given you my answer to the issues raised.
So
by
you're not going to discuss, is your position today that you are going to discuss nothing that was raised by those doctors in that report? Is that your position?
David, because it's being properly reviewed through an appropriate process, I'm going to wait for that process to conclude before I start venturing opinions on it.
When were you made aware of the report?
I was made aware of it about the time when it was brought to the department's attention.
That's roughly 2 weeks ago.
No,
it was
roughly
on,
a month ago.
It was on about the December the 6th. Was on or about the December 6th. Well, people regularly make claims, and as I've said from this podium on many occasions, where there are claims, we'll investigate them, we'll determine their veracity, and if there's responses that need to be made, we'll make those responses.
So you're taking no immediate action on the report that documents a catalogue of serious medical failings?
What we have done is what I've said to you now, and I think at least three occasions in response to your questions. And that is that we are appropriately assessing the claims that have been made.
When is your next press conference going to be, Minister?
I'll come to that later.
Minister.
Yes. Can I ask a question, please? Are you aware of the policy of immigration and border protection is to confiscate all medication of asylum seekers when they arrive at Christmas Island? Are you aware that sometimes that medication is not replaced and there are people in detention without their, in this case, in one case, at least in Perth Immigration Detention Centre, they've been taking their antipsychotic drugs away from them and they are deeply disturbed.
Well, medical assessments are made in relation to each individual and they receive the appropriate medication that those health officers believe that they are in need of based on a proper medical assessment by an Australian doctor. Now, that's the care that is provided and I'm sure the doctors are applying the appropriate assessment and the appropriate care to each and every individual.
Well, there is a woman, a 35-year-old woman in immigration detention in Perth who is not on her end.
Well, I'm happy to, if you want to refer the individual's case to us, I'm happy to have a look at it, but I'm very confident that the medical professionals that are providing her with care have the appropriate reasons for the care that they're providing.
Minister, were you aware of the case?
We've had about, I think, half a dozen questions from The Guardian today. We might have
so
take a
few. Questions.
Calm down. I'll take a few others, and then I'll come back to you. Yeah.
Minister, Bree Roberts from SBS Worldings Australia. There have been claims by obstetrics and gynaecology professor Carolyn DeCosta that expectant mothers in asylum seeker detention aren't receiving proper antenatal care, and two asylum seekers say they've lost their babies as a result. Will you respond to her calls for more doctors and nurses at Darwin's detention centres?
Well, the services that are provided in Darwin are actually provided by the Royal Darwin Hospital when it comes to care for people, particularly when it comes to delivery of babies. And so that is the care and standard that is provided to any Australian in that situation. And that is the policy of the government, that in those circumstances they would receive the same care and treatment that any Australian would.
Minister, the 15 doctors were told that the reason the woman who was assessed on Christmas Island to be pregnant with twins was sent to Nauru was at the direction of your department to set an example. Do you agree with that?
No, David, I've given you my response to the issue of the IHMS letter.
Can I ask it in a more general term then?
David, you can try and ask it any way you like.
I'm only seeking information, sir.
That's fine, David, and I've told you how we're responding to the issues raised in the IHMS letter, which I think is
Which is not to reply to any questions,
David,
because
we are working through the issues of that letter. There are serious issues raised in the letter. IHMS have outright rejected at least four specific claims made in those letters, and I'm not going to get into a commentary on individual items until I can have confidence that the matters that have been raised have been substantiated and the response that is going to be provided. Now, this government will tell you what it's done.
What has it done? Has any immediate action been taken?
Well, I've told you what we've done.
No, Minister, has any immediate action been taken as a result of this letter of concerns, which you have had for several weeks?
We're seeking to verify the claims that have been made in the letter, but as I said in my opening statement, David, I ran through millions and millions of funding dealing with psychiatric, general surgical and paediatric care in offshore processing centres. This government has filled a funding black hole for medical services at offshore processing centres left behind by the previous government, who had a commitment to offshore processing and the care of those there in name only.
Minister,
we've changed that. That's the action we've taken, David, and I think we've addressed the issue of the IHMS letter. Sure.
Under this new code, people on bridging visas can be sent offshore or back into detention if they make a breach. Can you tell us what circumstances people will be sent back to detention, what kind of offences they have to commit to go back to detention, what kind of offences they have to commit to be sent offshore?
Currently, the practice is that if someone has been charged with an offence, then they're immediately taken back into detention until that matter has been resolved. If there are serial breaches of other matters of the code of a more antisocial nature, the reason that the antisocial provisions are in the code is it gives the opportunity for the department and those managing people in the community, the opportunity to act early. And it gives also the opportunity to take action where people are behaving in a way which is upsetting others in the community. Now, at present, there are no powers to do that, and this code, you know, gives those tools to the people who are seeking to manage those in the community, and the work we've done with state and territory police also provides a broader level of cover and support to ensure we can act on those issues. Now, I simply noted in the statement I issued today that it is available to the government to not only take people back into detention, but, you know, to send people to offshore processing if that's what we choose to do. Now, I'm just noting that is a power we have available to us. The circumstances in which we might apply it would depend very much on the individual circumstances.
Is there apart from actual criminal activity that becomes uncomfortable? What examples were you aware of asylum seekers in the community that would lead to a social code?
Well, I should stress that the vast majority of people who are being released into the community, it's not like a regular immigration program where there is some sort of prior familiarisation with Australian societal standards and codes of behaviour. And I think it's actually quite helpful to be quite specific with people who are given the opportunity to live in the community, to be told what those expectations are, and to assume they just know, I think is frankly naive. And this government isn't being naive, and so we're being very clear about what those standards are and those values are. And I think that is a helpful thing to do. There have been complaints that people have received about antisocial behaviour in terms of overcrowding, in particular accommodation and things like that, that have caused a nuisance to nearby residents and have distressed elderly residents as well. Now, currently, there is no provision to really manage that behaviour. And what I would prefer to do is to be in a position to try and manage behaviour early on in the piece before it leads to the far more serious incidents we have seen, one of which involved a domestic incident actually between asylum seekers where one was actually killed. Now, that is obviously a scenario everybody wants to avoid. And sometimes that behaviour can exhibit itself in far less extreme ways early on in the case. And I think we do this in detention, we do it in community detention. Why the previous government didn't think it was a good idea to do it for people on bridging visas is for them to explain. This government disagrees.
Minister, is it to describe people being people who are on less than the unemployment benefit, to who have very limited means of income, who have to often crowd into places to survive, to judge that as antisocial behaviour?
No, you're assuming I was referring to their accommodation arrangements. This would mean large numbers of people turning up in particular places at places that have been rented, and that's not where they were living, sort of very informal arrangements. Now, it's just, I think, common sense measures to help manage people's behaviour in the community, and in many cases, the individuals themselves would be unaware that sort of behaviour was not acceptable.
Mr. Hussein, this is about education. Is it possible that you could take a less punitive approach in terms of teaching people what Australian values are?
Well, I think the two are not mutually exclusive, and that's largely what we're trying to do here. It's a clear election commitment. I know there was quite a bit of reaction at the time I announced it, and we fulfilled on that election commitment. I always said we would, and we have.
Minister,
how will the code be enforced? Will the service providers who actually have contact with the asylum seekers living in the community be required to report things to the department? Will the department go around checking on people's accommodation?
That already happens now.
How will you enforce the code?
The same way it already is now. There is already an existing monitoring arrangement in place. There is just no ability for people to take any action. And the code assists by both making people aware of what's expected of them, where complaints or other things are brought to the service provider's attention, then they have an opportunity to remind people of the code. If there's persistent non-compliance, then they can elevate that through the department, and departments can then make recommendations for the withdrawal of bridging visas if that's considered appropriate. But it's a case-by-case arrangement. There are service providers in place who manage the cases, and they will have the
code is fairly broad. Will they get some guidance about how to judge antisocial behaviour?
I have a lot of confidence in their ability to manage these
cases.
So
that will be up to them to determine. They won't be getting any more guidance.
And as time goes on, I think these things become clearer in how they're managed. It's a new program, and I'm sure the professionalism of those involved in the service providers as well as my own department will ensure that these things are exercised appropriately.
Minister, it would only take...
You are judged to have conducted antisocial behaviour of someone on a bridging visa, but not to have broken any law. Can you, in those circumstances, be sent to detention, back to detention?
Yes.
Minister, it would be the work only of a couple of hours to determine whether a number of the case studies referred to by the doctors of people who, in the medical view, ought not to be in immigration detention are in fact in immigration detention. Has anybody been in the 2 or 3 weeks that this report has been around, has anybody been removed from immigration detention or transferred for treatment to the mainland of Australia because of the doctor's report?
I'd have to come back to you on that, David, but I don't necessarily agree with the presumption in the starting question.
There have been reports of a pornographic video made on the detention center in Manus Island. If that proves true, do you expect the detainees allegedly involved to face charges on the Papua New Guinea?
Well, there's a lot of ifs in that question, and this rumour first circulated last Friday, and it's been a week, and the High Commission has received no video or anything to support the claim that is being made. Now, if the claim is substantiated, then of course that would be a serious issue. But as such, right now, it's been a week, and no video has been produced. So I can't really comment on something that's simply a rumour that hasn't been substantiated.
Sarah Hanson-Young commenting on Julie Bishop's visit to Nauru said that Julie Bishop's claims were unfounded because she only visited staff quarters. If that's true, is that responsible? Is that a responsible move by your government for Minister Bishop's trip to only involve viewing staff quarters?
When I was Shadow Minister for Immigration, I used to tour many centres, and on occasions staff at those centres would advise when it was a good idea to go into centres. I was happy to comply with the requests of the immigration officials at that time. Now, Senator Hanson-Young came to see me a few weeks ago. She said she would like to visit. I said I'd be happy to facilitate that, and she's welcome to visit. Senator Hanson-Young's visit was over several days, and that had excited a number of the people who were in the centre, and those officials on the ground at the time had advised Foreign Minister's group that it wasn't the best time for them also to be going in the centre at the same time, because it would make it more difficult to manage people within the centres, particularly both the SAMS compound as well as the family compound. Now, I'm the Minister for Immigration and Border Protection. I've visited those facilities. I'll be visiting them again in the new year. That's how the government informs itself of what's going on. The Foreign Minister was part of a Pacific tour, bipartisan Pacific tour that wasn't just taking in Nauru, it was taking in Solomon Islands, Vanuatu Islands, and a number of other places. So the purpose of the visit to Nauru wasn't specifically to visit the centres. The purpose of the visit was to engage with the government of Nauru, and I understand that was a very successful visit. I understand that the opposition members expressed no objection about not being able to tour those facilities, and they were happy to comply with the requirements of the officials.
Minister, you conceded in this press conference that you've had this letter signed by 15 doctors.
No, I didn't concede that. I said I'd been advised that the letter existed.
Okay. Nonetheless, I contacted your office yesterday afternoon, and I put in multiple phone calls, emails, and text messages to your media advisor, and you have not yet commented on it until this afternoon.
No,
why is it taken?
We hadn't received the letter, and we have not received the letter.
Why?
The minister's office was not provided with a copy.
That's absolutely not what I asked you, and I'll go back through the emails and show you again. And I asked
that, and I'll leave that to you and my media advisor to discuss.
Okay, absolutely. Okay, another more detailed question then on some of the contents of the report. It says that there was a man that had contracted tuberculosis who was kept inside.
This is a matter related to the IHMS report.
He was kept inside immigration detention with other detainees for 40 days.
Then I can't help you any further with it. Once the matters have been interrogated,
so you're not going to respond to any direct questions on the report whatsoever.
Because the matters are being investigated.
But you've but the department's had it for 3 weeks, and you're taking no immediate action.
There are serious matters that are raised with that, and you would want us to be sure of the veracity of those claims.
Serious matters that you might say require immediate action.
And that is exactly what the government is doing.
There's nothing you can say after 3 weeks' consideration of that report. There is nothing you can say to us about its contents. Is that your situation?
Investigations of the veracity of the letter.
Well, I've already responded to that.
Minister,
well,
are you aware of
that?
No.
I was just interested in a bit more detail, site visits, interviews with the docs, like what precisely has happened.
Well, those things have been done by the department together with IHMS, and I understand there's been a high level of engagement, particularly between IHMS and those individuals who'd signed the letter. So that's what's been taking place. Now, a lot has also happened since I think these claims were first raised in terms of the changes to practices and the improvement of facilities and funding that's been provided. And I've noted that over the last few months.
The report was dated late November.
While commentary has been offered on the standard facilities in the processing centres, the processing centres have been a state of constant improvement over the last 3 months. And I mean, for example, it was brought to my attention some months ago about the need to get proper playground facilities and shade and these sorts of things in place for the family facilities at Nauru. So I authorised for that to be done, and I ensured the funding was in place, and on the 2nd of January, the playground will appear. The earthworks, I received updates on that as late as yesterday afternoon. So things have been identified, and there are reasons things were identified, and that was because the previous government did not fund offshore processing.
Minister, are you aware of the phrase willful blindness?
Sorry?
Are you aware of the phrase willful blindness?
Keep going.
That's the question.
How does that relate to Operation Sovereign Borders?
Because you've been aware of this report for 3 weeks, and you've said you've made no immediate action.
6th of December is when the department received the letter.
Minister, it was asked.
Okay, we're going to have to wrap it up.
I was just going to say, did you take the decision to disband the Independent Health Advisory Group in the full knowledge of this report from 15 doctors?
Well, the Integration Health Advisory Group, it was a group that is formed to assist the department secretary. It is not a ministerial advisory group. It was not disbanded by me. It was disbanded by the secretary, and it was with the full concurrence of the chair of that committee. Now, what is being put in place the Immigration Health Advisory Group is a panel of independent medical experts to be established, and that is in the process of being formed. And advice is being sought from the chairs of the IHAB subcommittees comprised its membership. The view of the department secretary and the chair of the committee is that a different model is required to deal with the complexity of issues that are being raised with offshore processing in particular. I should also stress that we also have the ministerial advisory group on detention, which is chaired by Paris Aristotle. I would describe Paris as my closest external advisor on issues relating to offshore processing, and he raises issues with me on a regular basis, and I'm always pleased to receive the benefit of Paris's counsel. These matters we receive much advice on, and some of that is external, some of that is internal. The Secretary formed the view there was a need to change the way we were doing that, which is his prerogative. He advised me of his decision, and then he got on with it. Now, as we conclude, as it comes up to Christmas, this will be our last briefing for this year. What will occur in the weeks ahead is that a written statement will be issued on updating arrivals and transfers and things of that nature, which are the regular process of these briefings. As has always been our practice, and God forbid this occur, but if there is a serious incident, we would issue appropriate statements and would call a media conference wherever it was necessary to provide further information. That is how we conduct ourselves to date, and that's how we continue to conduct ourselves in the future. So with that, thank you for your attendance, and Merry Christmas.